trying to tell you is like, hey, if I could pay you less, I would.
Yes, if I could pay you less, I would. And trust me, they would. Which is why when you heard people like Ron Paul saying, well, we don't need a minimum wage, because we can get people to work for a buck an hour if they're that desperate. Well, good for us. Scary, scary times. The good news, though, this week, the Fight for 15 campaign celebrated their 6th anniversary, and a new report out by the National Employment Law Project finds some good reason for celebration. Since the worker-led movement began back in November of 2012, NELP reports that 22 million workers have seen their paychecks grow by up to $68 billion. And to steal a line from Joe Biden, it's a pretty big blanking deal. Here to share some thoughts on the new report on where we go from here, Yannette Lathrop is here. She's a research and policy analyst with the National Employment Law Project. Yannette, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So this is a pretty big deal. I mean, you know, you've got $68 billion in additional money in workers' pockets, especially the folks at the lower end. I think it's a pretty big deal.
Of course it is. It's a huge deal. It's a lot of money that will be in the pockets of workers at the end of phase end. The $68 billion is including some already increases that have already taken place in future ones that will be taking place in a year.
And as I understand, look, it's the legislation, because I talk about, look, I believe in worker power and you know, organizing on the work floor, on the shop floor, but also you got to be pushing for policies that are going to help everybody. And this is one of those, because I think the report points out that about 70% of the money that you're looking at is the result of laws that have been passed in places like California and New York and Massachusetts, and like SeaTac and other places that have moved forward with the $15 an hour minimum wage.
Correct, yes.
So, you know, when I look at this, because I remember back in November of 12, we had a number of people who were in the initial, launching of this on the program back then. And I remember going, wow, you know, $15 an hour, that is, I love, you know, moving the goalposts way out there. But even I was going, wow, that seems like a lot. And, you know, it seemed kind of radical, and I love radical. But even then I was going, wow, that's a bit. Are you amazed that, you know, here we are just 6 years later and it's become a reality?
Exactly. It's just the benchmark now. There are obviously some worker-led smaller movements, such as some action in the airports in New York and New Jersey that are have actually demanded and have won $19 an hour, et cetera. So 15 now is just a mainstream goal. At this point. So in just 6 years, as you mentioned, that is an incredible win for workers, low-wage workers in the country.
Yeah, I mean, it's now the floor. I mean, and now you're saying, hey, how do we get up from there to make sure that workers share in the wealth that they create? Now, from the beginning, and this is one of the things of the problems I have with the Fight for 15 campaign, they kind of lost the early message. Because right from the beginning, you know, I was saying, you know, Fight for 15 and a union. Where'd the and a union part go?
That is a good question. I think that has been overshadowed by the amount. It may be easier to quantify the amount of wages that have been won than it is to quantify the effects of the union demand. Obviously, I think your audience and yourself and myself, we all know that unions have been having some problems with recruitment and density. So that's one part of the story that doesn't get as much play for all those reasons, I think.
Yeah, well, there are a bunch of reasons, I think, that the unions are struggling to organize, and most of them come back to how broken and antiquated and ossified our labor laws are. You know, how the pendulum has swung way into the side of employers, and it's the bar is at this point, you know, really a very high bar for workers who want to join and form unions. Because look, I talk to a lot of these fast food workers and a lot of the people who have benefited from the Fight for 15 campaign, and they're like, look, we want the union. It's just, you know, the pendulum has swung way too far. So, you know, as you're looking at this, because, you know, it was just a report that I talked about a minute ago from the Federal Reserve, who's saying, look, you know, the reality is, you know, millennials, you know, have the same spending habits and the same wants and needs as their parents and grandparents. It's just that they're a lot broker. And I look at this Fight for 15 campaign and also me pushing for better union density as a way to close that gap. Any thoughts on that?
It would be great to be able to do something about union membership. Unions have been, in the past, one of the drivers for better wages and for a stronger middle class. It is about time that we get to that point again. It will be a long road, obviously, especially for the reason that you mentioned, which are the rules regarding membership and composition. Those need to be changed, obviously, and that will help us. But in the meantime, at least we have the demand and the understanding that a higher union density will help workers in the long term. That is an understanding that obviously needs to be repeated. We understand that, but the rest of the population possibly needs to understand that as well. Yeah. So the demand for a union definitely needs to be continue to be a part of the Fight for 15.
No, absolutely, because you know at the end of the day, it's about having that power at the workplace and pushing for classification rules. I mean, a big part of I think what happens, especially when you're talking about fast food, is that it's very difficult to organize individual place by individual place when McDonald's and Wendy's and Arby's and all the rest of them have franchised off all of this stuff and they're so broken and scattered and you've got all this misclassification going on. I mean, there's got to be some regulatory and legal framework to help protect workers from what has sprung up around them.
Exactly, and that is another part of the fight that needs to be highlighted, and the National Employment Law Project and others are working towards all of those issues. So hopefully in the future we'll have more good news to report.
Yeah, no, this is fantastic. So what kind of reaction have you gotten to this report?
Well, there has been some interest. The report itself is, it's something that hopefully will highlight the wins of workers and will get cited a little bit more. So far, not as much as we wish, but the year's not over yet. And I think that this will be a number that will go together well with a report, a later report that we'll be releasing towards the middle of December on raises in various places in the country in December 31st and January 1st.
Yeah, but here's the thing. These are wins. I mean, you celebrate mm-hmm. wins. You celebrate wins like crazy. I mean, like I said, when we first interviewed the first couple of people, and New York had a pocket of organizing that started. Chicago, they had another group, and I forget the name of the other group in Chicago. They were doing similar things at the similar time, and we had people from there. And I remember going, "Wow, this is what we need. We need this kind of organizing." And now, seeing the fruits of that 6-year campaign, I think is really exciting and something that again needs to be celebrated.
It definitely does. I am looking at some of my papers for. I was looking at some of my papers for this for your show, and I was counting the number of states I have raised the minimum wage since the Fight for 15 began, and that's a total of 22 states. So almost half the number of states in the country have raised their minimum wage because of the Fight for 15. And out of those 22, three, obviously, New York, California, and Massachusetts have raised it to $15 an hour. And in addition to that, 53 cities and counties have also raised the minimum wage to some level. Out of those, about 28 have raised it to 15. So that is an incredible victory for workers, low-wage workers, because this is a worker-led movement,
yep.
After all.
No, you're absolutely right. And at the end of it, sadly, Pennsylvania is not one of those states.
No, and that is, I think, as you, I'm sure you know about your state, that there are complications with that. But I know that there are a good number of people that are continuing to advocate for a $15 an hour or some other type of minimum wage increase. And hopefully there will be some movement in the future in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is one of the states that right now is stuck at $7.25 an hour.
Yeah, well, actually $7.15 here in Pennsylvania. Federal minimum wage $7.25. We're still in the old days where we haven't even reached the federal minimum yet. which is just how bad things are. And, you know, again, this is another one of those things why elections have consequences. And as I was saying earlier, when we had, higher union density in this state and in other states across the country, you had people who were pushing for better laws that would make working conditions better. And I'm hoping we get back to those days.
Yeah, hopefully soon. So, I'm sure that Pennsylvania families do need the increase.
So now, in looking at this, and I look, $68 billion in people's paychecks is nothing to sneeze at. And the hope is that this will be the message going forward that, look, hey, we're winning. Join us. Come grow. We can all do this. This actually shows some concrete proof that progress is being made, I think.
It does. And I think that is, in addition to just the number, the $68 billion, I think we need to keep in mind to get a broader understanding of the strides that the wage workers have made is that $15 an hour now is part of the Democratic Party platform, for example, and it is, again, a benchmark, is a minimum that localities are going for. Not all of them. Missouri and Arkansas did approve minimum wage increases during the last election. For less than 15, but that is a number that many other states, and especially in the coasts, are probably going to be looking towards $15 an hour as a minimum.
Yeah, well, look, I said this back, in 2012 when this began. I said, you put the goalpost out there, and this is where Democrats can learn a lesson. This is an interesting lesson for Democrats who want to sit at a negotiating table. You put something out there that you really want, and then you settle for something less. You don't start where you really want and then end up having to settle for something. Well, it's almost what I wanted. And I said back then, 15 is a great goal. Let's try and get there. But if you get to 12, guess what? You just increased the minimum wage by almost $5 an hour.
Exactly. And we'll see what happens. In the next year, there will be, I'm sure, a $15 an hour federal proposal, a bill that will be introduced, and we will have this conversation again at the national level.
Yeah, it's something that we're going to have to continue to fight. And again, it comes back to politics. I mean, I look at Michigan right now. I don't know if you've seen what they're trying to pull in Michigan. The voters said, look, we want higher minimum wages and we want paid sick days. And what's the legislature doing now in the lame duck? Trying to gut that.
Yes, and that is the other side of the story. I hate talking about it because it really does make me a little bit depressed, but it is something that we need to watch out for, is when workers and voters make their voices heard about minimum wages, there will be some detractors who will try to roll back those wage increases. And we have seen that in mostly at the city level through preemption legislation. And, for example, in Birmingham, in Alabama, that affected Birmingham, in Missouri, that affected St. Louis, in other places in Iowa, affecting about 5 counties there. And so that is the other side of the story, and we need to watch out and be push back against those type of efforts.
We need to do more than push back. We need to throw the bums out and make sure they never get back in again. Again, this is why elections have consequences. But I just wanted to get you on to celebrate this, because I think this is great news. I think this is going to be one of those things you lead with on the flyer of why the next worker joins the worker-led movement. I just think it's a good thing. And, Yannette, I appreciate you taking some time for us.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you so much. Again, you want to check out NELP's work. They do fantastic work. We'll get links out at thericksmithshow.com, where you can check out their website, NELP.org. Still good stuff, like I said. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.